I came across this quote this week as I was prepping, and I just found myself continually drawn to it. It was a quote attributed to Winston Churchill, and it essentially went like this: if you find yourself going through hell, keep going. And I thought, you know, that is a really great quote, because it's so easy, is it not, to get stuck in life. It's very easy to allow the circumstances and the realities of everyday life to sort of get us stuck and to help us feel powerless and to feel as if there's nowhere else we can go. And I love that, because I think when we get to this book that we're studying this summer, the book of Philippians, what we see is a relentless pursuit of joy. Paul did not allow himself to get stuck, and he was encouraging the readers of this book to do the same. The circumstances of this book are such that Paul finds himself in prison. The cause of the gospel is challenged and threatened. This young church is obviously going through a few growing pains. And yet, in the midst of these challenges and crises, as you read through the book of Philippians, the word joy, joy, joy comes. In fact, one commentator described the book of Philippians as a book written to encourage us as believers to learn how to fight for joy. To fight for joy. You know, that's a real spiritual fight, isn't it? Very often we lose sight of that. I remember hearing one pastor talk about a gentleman that they were considering elevating to leadership in the church. And one of the comments they made about the guy's character, which I thought was interesting, was this. They said, he has failed to take responsibility for his joy. You know, he's just sort of failed to take, you know, to really engage in that fight for joy. And instead is settled to get stuck. Well, how about you this morning? Where are you in that fight for joy? In the passage that we're in Philippians this morning, I think Paul lays out for us three principles, three ideas, three thoughts that enable us to continue on in this fight for joy. And all three start with the letter P. Isn't that awesome? Well, I came up with the P part, all right? But they're this, all right? They're perspective, purpose, and power. If we're to continue on in this fight for joy, then what we need is the right perspective, the proper purpose, and the connection to the power. Let's take a look first at the right perspective. A psychologist by the name of Dan McAdams, who's done a lot of study into fruitful lives and a lot of interviews, a lifetime studying what are the elements that make for a fruitful life. In other words, what are the things that when you look back at your life, you will look back and you will say, that made my life worth living. And he said that there, after years of study, he said that two things emerged as consistent themes in people that felt like their lives were fruitful. The first one was a redemptive quality. They felt as though they were able to take the difficult things in their life and turn them and use them for good. And the second was that people who felt as though they lived fruitful lives had developed a sense of essential optimism. That no matter the circumstances, they were able to look at it with an essential sense of optimism. I think the Christian virtue we would describe is hope. Hope. And in verses 12 and 13, I think Paul in this passage helps us to realize that the right perspective that will help us have like a redemptive, hopeful aspect, outlook on our lives. And that outlook is basically centered in one essential idea, that God is at work in your life. Look what he says again. He says, therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. God is at work in your life. Do you believe that? The life you're living right now, the life that you're going to go home to after this morning, do you believe that that life with those kids, that job, that house, that God is at work in that life? Paul says if you believe that, then one of the things that you'll key into is that you will see where it is that God is at work. And he says, God is at work in two ways, to will and to work for his pleasure. To will and to work for his pleasure. God gives you both the desire and the power to do what he wants. The desire and the power to pursue the good. Those are two things that together we can't manufacture on our own. We may have the desire to do good, but we lack the power to do good. God is at work in your life both to will and to work for his good pleasure. I remember one of the litmus tests that I knew I had become a Christian in college was even after I became a Christian and I still would occasionally engage in, let's say, non-sanctifying behavior, all right? What I discovered was that I still did it, but I didn't have nearly as much fun. Because God was at work to will and to work for his good pleasure. See, in order to relentlessly pursue joy, you have got to understand that God is at work in your life. And that perspective makes all the difference. If you find yourself this morning in circumstances that seem overwhelming, God is at work in your life. If you find yourself this morning in circumstances that seem just incredibly mundane and boring, and I am just trying to survive without sticking my kids in front of the television for 6 hours today, right? God is at work in your life, okay? And that perspective is huge. And it's so huge that Paul says, look, what God works in, you work out. What God works in, you work out. He says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. You can't work in your salvation. You can't save yourself. But at the same time, if God is at work in your life, then everything you do matters. And it counts. And a sense of proper perspective gives things meaning. They once talked they interviewed someone in a concentration camp, and they said the worst torture they ever saw was sending work crews out in the morning to dig a hole, and the next day they would send them back out to dig to bury in the exact same hole. Every day the work just was more and more meaningless, and the meaninglessness of it all is what wrecked it for them. Your life is not meaningless. God is at work, and what you do matters. And with that perspective, it can give you a sense of joy that you won't find anywhere else. Well, let's move on to the next P, and it's purpose. And I'll be quick here because I know we're Anglicans, and I know God's part is to work in my sermon, and my part is to try to get it done in 20 minutes or less, all right? So I'll be quick here. But there is, not only is there a right perspective, but there is purpose to your life. There's a purpose. And look what he says. He says, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in that day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain. You are to shine as lights in the world. You know, again, what your life has meaning and purpose because you have the opportunity to shine the light of Christ wherever you go. And again, I said it was going to be brief here. We could spend a lot of time here. But I just want to key in on one insight into this passage, okay? There's lots of ways that we could talk about what does it mean to shine as lights in the world. But I want to talk about one way. Typically, we as Americans, when we read these passages in the Bible, we individualize them. We say to ourselves, I gotta shine as this bright spotlight, and I gotta make it's all up to me. But you know, the New Testament epistles were rarely written to individuals. Sometimes they were written to church leaders, but if they have the name of a city, they were written to a congregation. They were written to a group of congregations. They were written to a community. And I think one of the things that Paul is saying here is that if you want to shine as a light, then you better do it together. Because the real way you shine as a light is not just yourself with like this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Right? The real way you shine is together. Together. You know, I brought my 4 and 8-year-old at the time to the Easter Saturday family fun day here, and you know it was a great afternoon, and at some point Claire took the four, you know, little kids through a gospel presentation, and the next day my 4-year-old is talking to me about this just spontaneously, and it was awesome. But you know, you did it together. You were able to shine as a light because you were working together. Imagine if Claire was just responsible for the program, the cooking, the games, and she had to do all of it. But all of you together, right? You shine as a light together. And that's why Paul says here, you want to kill community, you want to snuff your light out. Here's how you do it. Grumble and complain. Grumble and complain. Because the things that kill community are the grumbling and the complaining. And Satan loves that. Satan has 3 basic agendas. He wants to discourage you, he wants to distract you, and he wants to divide you. Because if he can do that, you will not shine as a light. And so Paul says, remember your purpose. Remember that and let that guide you. And they'll give you joy, because you know what you discover when you work together with others? There's a joy in community that you can't find anywhere else. So the right perspective helps us fight for joy. The right purpose helps us fight for joy. And lastly, the right power. The right power. You know, as I was prepping this week, I found myself thinking about this last sentence where Paul says, even if I'm to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith. I just kept thinking, what is that? What is he talking about? Well, you know, and so I did some research, and you know, a drink offering. What was a drink offering? Well, in like the book of Numbers and Leviticus, they talk about a drink offering. And my understanding of the drink offering was you would have the main sacrifice, right? The main sacrifice was, you know, the sheep or the goat or the bull. And then you would, you know, mix in a little wine. and you would pour that. That would be a little like flavor, you know, like a little marinade maybe, you know. But that was the drink offering. It was much smaller. It was much less significant. And I find it interesting that when Paul talks about his sacrifice, he doesn't talk about himself as the main sacrifice. He says that I'm just kind of the flavor. Even if my life, just to a small degree, sort of flavors the sacrifice of Christ, then that's awesome. That's awesome. Because I think what Paul, one of the things he may be trying to kind of get you in touch with is he says, the real power, right? The real power for joy comes from your faith. And what is your faith? Your faith is the belief that God loved you so much that he was willing to sacrifice his only son for you. No one else can recreate that sacrifice. No one else can be that sacrifice. But you are loved so deeply that Jesus sacrificed himself for you. See, I think the power of joy is love. And the currency of love is sacrifice. And I think maybe one of the subtle things that Paul is trying to say here is that the real power that you find for joy is when you remember in your faith that you are loved. You are loved sacrificially. And because of that love, you now have the power to love others and the perspective and the purpose that you need. If you find yourself going through hell, keep going. Keep going. Don't get stuck. You don't need to get stuck. Because of Jesus Christ and the power of His Spirit, you can have the perspective that God is at work in your life. Because of Jesus Christ, you have a purpose to your life that will always fill you with joy. And lastly, you have the power to do it because you have been loved sacrificially. Keep going. Amen.